Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Larkin, the host of Beauty, Strength, and Dominance, the LFC podcast, the co-host of the Steve and Mike Show, and one-third of the Max Wrestling Podcast, and you are listening to the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Tune in and relax and unwind.
Hey, this is John Thorne, owner of Absolute Intense Wrestling, and you are listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast.
This is Dr. Phil McGraw, and you are listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast. Like, share, and subscribe. And if you don't, you can catch me outside. How about that?
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. Sin City Steve, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
We're doing good, doing good. Matt Michaels?
I'm doing great because we got one of my all-time favorite people in the business ever.
Yes, we do. First interview of the new year. I'm excited to introduce to everyone NWA, WCW legend, Nikita Koloff. Let's give him some love. How you doing, Nikita?
Shit went out, guys. How are you today? I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. Little touch of history there.
Yes. You know, that's the most amazing thing when you're a kid and you watch something and you're so influenced by it and you hear it and it brings you back to those days. And then in the next breath, you realize you were from Minnesota all along.
but I was from Moscow, Minnesota. Yeah. I'm kidding. There's no Moscow, Minnesota, but I am. You're right. I am from Minnesota. That is correct. That's right. Burst everybody's bubble at some point along the journey.
You know, growing up there, is there a favorite place that you used to like to go to as a kid? Was there something or something that you did and had fun as a kid that, you know, anytime you go back to the Minnesota area, that kind of sparks those memories?
You know, great question. And I don't know that. That's a really great question. I don't know anyone's ever even asked that before, truthfully. But I don't live there anymore. I've been in the Carolinas ever since I broke into wrestling in 1984. So in one sense, I'm more of a native North Carolinian now than I am a Minnesotan. although... still loyal to all of my sporting teams, Vikings, Twins, and the rest of them. But that said, I enjoy going back to visit. I was just there over the Thanksgiving holidays and with my sister and brother-in-law. I have nephews and nieces up there. I enjoy visiting, and we even got snow for Thanksgiving. I enjoy the snow, but I also enjoy even more the fact that I know I'm leaving and going back south where it's warmer. Great memories, though. Growing up as a kid, no regrets. I mean, I loved it, you know, sledding and snowmobiling and just all the stuff you do in the wintertime. And so those are fun times. And there's nothing like a white Christmas, like a white Christmas.
Well, you know, and that's really interesting that you said that because it was colder here in Vegas. And one of the most beautiful things that you can see driving at Christmas time is snow. And here are the mountains were just covered like you wouldn't believe for, you know, the West Coast. It was like, it's a little bit because I grew up in Chicago. So it's a little bit of that hometown feel, but you don't actually have to deal with the actual snow, which is the best thing in the world. I totally agree.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's it, right? I get to enjoy it for a handful of days and then I get to leave.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So you know, you're on your way to trying out for the storied USFL. And you take a side trip into pro wrestling because the animal tells you, hey, go out for this. do this. I mean, how did that all happen? Like, you just kind of stumbled into it, man.
Yeah, it really is a crazy. The older I get, the more I reflect back on it. In fact, I just talked to Don Kernodle over the holidays, over the Christmas holidays, and we reminisced about really kind of how crazy an idea it all was. But as he said, man, we handed you the ball and you ran with it and really scored a touchdown. But that said, yeah, I mean, wrestling wasn't on my radar growing up as a kid. I mean, weightlifting, I was passionate about weightlifting. I was passionate about football. The combination of those two things as a kid, had my sights and dreams set on the NFL. And I'm training, graduated college, training for a pro football tryout, rehabilitating an injury from college. And I get the call from Road Warrior Animal, and he shares the storyline, the idea of a nephew for Ivan Koloff. and I go, now, hang on, do they know? I had no amateur wrestling experience, background, no professional training whatsoever, like zero, like none, no ropes. And he goes, yeah. And so they didn't care. I go, so what I need to do? He goes, well, call this promoter in Charlotte, Jim Crockett. Here's his phone number. So, you know, I do, and this is way before the days of snapping a selfie of yourself and sending it, right? I just have a five-minute phone conversation, and I just, now, Mr. Crockett, you understand, here's the deal, right? And he goes, yep, that's what they told him. I go, well, so what would I have to do next? He goes, be in my office on June 4th with your head shaved, bald. And I go, that's it? And he says, yep, okay. I hung up the phone. 2 months later, I drove to a city that I'd never been. I walked into an office. In fact, I'm doing this interview just blocks away from that office with you guys right now.
Wow.
And I walked into that office the day he said to be there, only having a five-minute conversation with him prior, took a look at me. What he says, take your shirt off. I'm like, I got to be honest with you. I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but okay. take your shirt off. But he walks out. He wait here. Walks out, walks back in with two guys, Don Kernodle, Ivan Koloff. Take a look at your new partner. And Nikita Koloff's born in the hallways of Charlotte, North Carolina in 1984 that day.
And that's,
wow, that's how it began.
That's that amazing. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And
they put, well, and I just a quick tag on that. So they put me right on the interview set. They go, okay, you're from Russia. You don't speak any English. Shirt off. Chains around your neck. Stand there and look at me. And I go, all right. And I'm going to get paid for this, right? Okay. And we finished all the interviews. And then, you know, hours of interviews. And then Crockett says at the end of the day, he goes, be in Raleigh, North Carolina tomorrow night. You're going to wrestle on television, having never been in a ring before.
Oh, God. And who was that first match with? I forget.
Well, it was, at the time, he called himself Bret Hart, but when he went up to the WWF, he became known as Barry Horowitz.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
The guy patted himself on the back.
Oh, yeah.
I asked him, I got to tell you this, I didn't see Barry for, I don't know, like maybe 25 years, and I saw him at an Legend autograph signing two, 3 years ago, something like that. Anyway, I pulled him aside and go, hey, I've always wondered this. Let me ask you a question. I said, you were my first match ever, right? He goes, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah, I know. I go, I'm just curious, did they say anything to you about the fact that I had never been in a ring before? You stepped in the ring with me that night. He goes, no, they kind of left that little detail out.
Wow. Yeah.
Fortunately for him, it was only 11 seconds long, so his pain was minimal.
And, with that kind of mentality, and obviously, you grow, but was it harder for you to learn how to wrestle in the ring, or was it harder for you to learn the Russian accent?
I'd say that really I took 6 months on the accent. I didn't speak any English. If you guys have read or know some of the story, I didn't speak any English anywhere outside of the little bit of the car. Well, in the car I drove in, not even that much in dressing rooms. Mark Merrill came to me not too long ago. Johnny B. Badd, Mark Merrill.
Mm-hmm.
He said, dude, He goes, I've never told you this story, but when I first came to the Carolinas, and you're in the dressing room talking with that asset, he goes, number one, you scared me to death. and he's one of the boys, right, in the business. He goes, you scared me to death. And secondly, I look at guys and go, does he know we're smart to the business that he didn't have to kayfabe us in here? I talk about that action everywhere, right? So 6 months, no English really anywhere. But I had time to develop that action, right? Mm-hmm. And so the mechanic, because having no experience, what Ivan and Don and I would do over the next 2-3 months is to their credit, and I'm so thankful, we would get to the towns 2-3 hours earlier than normal, and they would get in the ring and bump all over the ring for me and begin to teach me the mechanics of wrestling.
Yeah.
Then I'd sit in their corner that night, watch their world tag team match, and Ivan, of course, you know, Uncle Ivan would sit in my corner. Mm-hmm. And then on the way home every night, we would then talk about the psychology of wrestling. Yeah. So mechanics before the match, psychology after the matches, and application during the night in the ring.
That's awesome.
Man. Yeah, that's going to wrestling school but getting paid to do it while going in front of a live, you know, audience and television cameras. Yep. That's amazing.
Yeah, every night, yeah.
Without a doubt. And one thing that that stood out for me is that for a little while, you wrestled pretty briefly in Puerto Rico for WWC. Do you have any kind of stories from your time when you were wrestling in Puerto Rico?
Well, what Crockett kind of, I mean, I was always, I've been NWA for life, right? I mean, right. I did a few TV tapings with Zabisco for Vern Gagne to kind of help them out when they were struggling. Crockett sent us down to Mid-South a couple times, Ivan and I a few times with Watts. And so the shots down to Puerto Rico were really just Crockett farming me out for a few shots. Mm-hmm. Is what those were. I can tell you this, if as a heel, as a bad guy, I didn't ever care to go back to Puerto Rico ever again after the few matches I had down there. The fans, I mean, oh my gosh. I mean, they literally, yeah. And I'm not exaggerating this, we'd be in a van, the only windows on it was the front windshield and the two front doors. So we're in a van, kind of a sealed van, but it would take AK-47 security guards to get us to the stadium through the crowd in the vans, and then from the dressing room to the ring, because they're like outdoor shows typically, or a lot of times, but there's a cage all the way down the whole entire walkway so fans can't get at you. All the way around the ring there's a cage, and then the kids would sell bags of rocks outside to throw at the bad guys.
Jeez.
Of which I was pummeled by more than one. In fact, one night, I'm walking to the ring, I got hit in the back. I felt something sting me in the back of the arm. I'm like, what the heck? I look down, and they're no kidding. It's a spark plug. Somebody, and it cut open the back of my arm. Somebody had thrown a spark plug at me. So,
wow.
Yeah, I at least as a bad guy, I didn't care if I ever wrestled in Puerto Rico again. Of course, they had me against Hercules Ayala, the heavyweight.
Yeah.
You know, their superstar, heavyweight superstar, strongman Ayala. So anyway, so yeah, I have some memories of Puerto Rico, but they're not necessarily fun.
Yeah, it's storied just how rabid the fan base is, and I figured that you had some run-ins with some fans, but you know, it's good to know that my assumptions were correct. But
correct. You were correct.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying, though, as far as never wanting to go back there as a heel.
Yep.
Time-wise, you went to Puerto Rico before or after Brody's death?
It would have been before. I don't know that I would have went had that happened before. I was there before that had happened. Yeah.
And did you ever get a chance, because when I think of, you know, my youth and watching, you know, the various shows, yourself and Bruiser, to me, stood out as two of the most, you know, unbelievably terrifying yet lovable characters.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to, you know, work with him or at least around him? Because I know, you know, he wasn't necessarily, you know, in the Crockett's realm all the time.
Right, right. Yeah, I did three tours to Japan. In fact, there's a picture that floats around there. I see it on social media every now and then. And it actually has myself, Brody, and Bam Bam Gordy, Terry Gordy, all three of us kind of leaning in on the team bus there, headed to a town somewhere. So, yeah, I did some work in Japan, not against him, but on the same card with him in Japan.
Mm-hmm. And what were those trips in Japan like? You know, I've heard different stories about, you know, just kind of long bus rides, but, you know, receptive fans. Was the travels over there, you know, was it a good time bonding with the guys, or was it just like, you know, I just want this to be over and get back to the States?
It kind of depended on who you were. Now, I was fortunate, you know, I had a little leverage there in a couple ways. One, Crockett, you know, most of those tours over there usually were, back then, were 4 or 5 weeks. And but Crockett wasn't going to let me go that long. He was okay with me going, again, kind of farming me out, but he wasn't going to let me go. So I did two-week tours and I only did three tours over there. A one-week tour just kind of whet my appetite, and then later two-week tours. And I was not well received. So I'm there at the beginning of the tour, and I'm leaving, you know, kind of, you might say, halfway or, you know, through it, and the other guys are like, I hate you. You're getting to go home. Yeah, you know, because the longer you're there, the more grueling it becomes.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't well loved by the boys being able to split, you know, 2-3 weeks earlier than as they still had to hang in there and continue to grind it out.
Yeah, from all your travels around the world, is there a place that you enjoyed going to the most? And is there any type of thing that you got culturally from, you know, any places you went overseas that you enjoyed?
Wrestling related?
You know, wrestling related or just in life. You know, I think it's just fascinating the way that journeys take us and, you know, to get to experience other things is wonderful. And, yeah, you know, is there something that's impacted you?
Well, I'll give a two-part answer. So I'll start, yes, because I just went this past November to my 29th country. So,
wow.
So wrestling-related, certainly Japan was very great memories. It's just some of the most honoring people on the planet, even still to this day, I will say. I'm actually going back to Tokyo for the first time since 1986 this year during the Olympics to be on a ministry team. So I'm going back to this time as a minister during the Olympics in Tokyo.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, an incredible honor. And I hadn't been there since 1986. But, That said, certainly Japan brings great memories, just how honoring the people are, how respectful the people were when we were there. And not just because I was a wrestler, I don't believe, just in general, just the people in general. And so that's certainly a great memory in my travels. And so many incredible things. I mean, I've had the privilege of the blessing of seeing the sights of several islands of Hawaii, of walking the glaciers of Alaska, of seeing the Grand Canyon for the very first time ever in a full blown blizzard. You know, talking about snow,
huh.
a 32 degrees at the top of the canyon, one third of it's white, and it's 72 degrees at the bottom of the canyon, and it's a full on blizzard, and so. You know, that experience, the fast trains, you know, in Korea, and Africa. I mean, I've been 11 different trips to 7 or 8 different countries in Africa. And then most recently, I just filled a bucket list, took my youngest daughter, Colby, sister and brother-in-law, and we all went to China for 10 days. I got to walk, I got to climb. You don't walk the Great Wall of China. You climb the Great Wall of China. And I got to do that, as well as many other fantastic things there. But the Great Wall was, I mean, this thing's 13,000, like 130 miles long, and it took like 2,000 years to build. Are you kidding
me? Man, yeah.
It's amazing.
Right? So I've been blessed, to do some incredible things. Oh, one last thought. A couple years ago, I did a 21-day tour across Canada, autograph signing across Canada, 21 cities in 21 days, covered 5,500 miles.
Wow.
And got to experience 4 different provinces and see things that were just kind of, again, once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience. So, I've been just so blessed. Yep. Great, great. Love seeing the world. Go out there and see the world. Listeners, if you haven't gone to see the world, go see the world. There's nothing like it. Go experience life and see what is on the other side of the world.
Really quick follow-up on that, and this is, to me, a fascinating question. Did you ever get a chance to go to Russia?
You know, in fact, I just had this discussion with actually a couple of Russians recently. I ask that question from time to time. I'm like, because they're like, so you're not really Russian. I go, nope, it was just a character I portrayed. They're like, oh, yeah, well, so have you ever been to Russia? I'm like, well, not yet. But I've added it to my bucket list. And the recommendation is, if I go, obviously I want to go see Moscow, Red Square, and all that, but everybody says go to St. Petersburg. They say it's the most beautiful city. So St. Petersburg, Moscow is now on the bucket list, and that is something I'll do, but have yet to go. So,
that's amazing.
Definitely, man. And so that bears the question, outside of Russia, are there any places that you haven't traveled that you have on that bucket list?
Yep. I am, actually Australia, New Zealand. I've yet to be. So wow. I want to go to Australia. Yeah. I want to go to New Zealand and Australia. I want to go see the pyramids of Egypt. Ooh. I've yet to do that. I want to see the pyramids of Egypt. And then I am going, this year is kind of a crazy year. I got a big cruise I'm hosting with some other book authors at the end of May that we're doing. It's open to anybody. I'll shoot you guys a flyer on it. You get you all the information. But
yeah.
we're gonna cruise the Western Caribbean. It's kind of an inspirational. All the guys with me, the guys and gals, are all well known book authors, speakers, and we're just hosting a little deal for anyone, any friends or family, anyone that wants to come and just hang out with us and give everyone, some free books and just have some fun together. But, and then the summer I'm going back to Israel for the second time. That's probably number one on the top of the chain of top of the chart of travels was when Ted DiBiase and I and another friend, traveled 11 days to Jordan and to Israel, a few years back. And yeah, I got baptized in the Jordan River, that whole experience.
Oh, wow.
That was, it was life-changing. But the other one is I don't know, I hadn't decided yet if it was going to be 30 days or 60 days, but at some point, I'm going to go to Europe, get a Europass, and just see as much of Europe in whatever time frame I set on that, and just see as much of Europe while I'm there, and the Swiss Alps, and just all the different things, Italy and Spain and Portugal and all the different places, France. And, that's on the list too.
If you end up doing that, I definitely need to see video of you singing The Sound of Music on the hills.
All right. Note to self, that's such a phenomenal movie. I will do that. I actually, little side note here. So Dan, and I forget now, it's been a few years, but Dan, His last name slips my mind. Check this out. So the young German in that movie, who blows the whistle on him, right?
Right.
Who's in love with the daughter, but he blows the whistle on him. He lived in Concord, North Carolina, and he and I did some business together about 15 years ago. Had him at my house. Had him at my house for a big business meeting, right? Had 30, 40 people there. Had that movie with that scene queued up. He didn't have no clue I was going to do this. I showed that clip, and everyone's telling, looking, going, it's a business meeting. Why are we watching The Sound of Music? And I said, I'm sure many of you are probably curious as to why I would entertain you with this clip. I go, let me introduce you to, and I said whatever his name was in the movie, and there, all the people are like, oh my gosh, man, and he was blown away, they were blown away, so yeah, a little side note there, so maybe I'll look him up and get some tips from him and do that for you guys.
Yeah, Truitt. Yeah, Truitt, that's it, yeah.
Dan Truitt, yeah, just came to me, Dan Truitt, yep.
Played Rolf Gruber.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know your history. That's right. Yeah.
Yep. I am 16, anyway. Going on 17.
There you go. I love it. That's awesome.
You know, and bringing up that side of things, is there any secret talents that you have that, you know, none of us know of because we just see you as, you know, the Russian nightmare?
No Russian nightmare, Nikita Koloff. Well, maybe casting that accent was one of my greatest talents. I'm not sure. Yeah. I definitely don't sing other than in the shower. So you're probably not going to catch me on stage. I'm not very musically inclined in terms of instruments. But I played the 5-string instrument. Excuse me, the 10-string instrument. That's me clapping my hands. That's as close as I come to playing an instrument, but probably not really. I mean, I go out and do some, you know, recreational golf from time to time, some of the celebrity charity, you know, tournaments, and do okay. I mean, I'm not a scratch golfer or anything, but I've held my own in some, and helped our team win a couple of them, and so yeah, that's probably probably a lesser known fact that people might know.
You know, thinking back to Jim Crockett, what kind of memories do you have? Was he, you know, a lot of times you hear all this talk about Vince McMahon or Eric Bischoff, and I think it's, you know, or Paul Heyman, because of the, you know, consumption of media, I guess, is the best way to put it. But I think sometimes that Jim Crockett gets lost. Is there anything about him that, you know, I mean, obviously he took a huge gamble, you know, just looking at you and putting you in there. Was there any interaction that, you know, was he a lovable man? Was he, you know, an old curmudgeon? You know, what kind of personality in person was he?
I mean, he was pretty, you know, kind of matter-of-fact, kind of, you know, quite a bit all about business. I mean, you know, it wasn't your, you know, what I would qualify or classify as, you know, a real jokester or anything like that. I mean, he had a certain sense of humor, but it would have been more of a kind of a drier sense of humor. He was just more about business. You know, I'll say part of what makes me NWA for life is Jim Crockett. I mean, he did take a chance. I mean, he gave me the break of a lifetime. Now, yes, as Kernodle says, you know, yeah, but you still had to carry it out. You still had to make it happen. You know, and I get that. But nevertheless, Jim opened that door of opportunity for me. And so I'm forever grateful to Jim and to the Crockett family for that reason. Which is what's made me such a loyal NWA guy, including, and I can certainly share more if you want, you know, part of the, what always comes up is, you know, did Vince McMahon ever call you? You know, why didn't you go to the WWF? That sort of thing. We can cover that too. But on Jim Crockett, just nothing but gratitude for Jim and the opportunity. And I think you know, look at that. That day I walked into his office, he saw a guy that was 285 pounds, 8% body fat, and a 34-inch wave. I don't know. He didn't know what I could do in the ring, but I envisioned dollar signs kind of ringing through his, you know, up and down through his eyeballs if I could even half work, you know. But I carried, and he was, you know, his family was in the business for over 50 years, yeah. So they had a pretty thriving business. And he was a pretty creative guy in that sense and smart enough to bring guys like Dusty Rhodes and others in, you know, to do the booking and et cetera. But he had a role in that. He had a part in that as well. So nothing but good things to say from me for Jim Crockett Jr.
Perfect, man. And so obviously, let's talk about 1986. Let's talk about that Best of Seven series with Magnum TA. And mm-hmm. and the plus one, as far as a lot of people are concerned, I am one of these people. That was the best feud in Jim Crockett Promotions during the entire history of the promotion. So I you guys did amazing work through that. What was the backstage feel as things kind of culminated toward the end of that, and of course winning the title from TA.
I mean, you know, historical, and it's, in a sense, the most talked about thing in my interviews or, you know, when I'm out and about with fans is the Best of Seven with Magnum and our styles of wrestling and how, you know, because he worked similar styles, you know, just a very snug, you know, how many fans I've since heard say, you know, back in the day, we'd say, I don't know about whether the mother matches are real or not, but that match with the kid. and Magnum, yeah, that match was real. And to Dusty's credit, you know, ingenious credit of coming up with the idea of the Best of Seven. And then, you know, to unfold it the way we did, right? 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, 3-2, 3-3, and then coming down to that seventh and final match. And, you know, somehow that chain worked its way into the ring and somehow aided me in the victory of winning that belt. just the building of anticipation and the fans, how engaging the fans were, especially as Terry began to, you know, win that first one and then win the second, and then also, you know, some more and more hope built as the more matches he won to, you know, to come back, and then on that seventh and final night, I mean, just the electricity, and again, Crockett dedicated, he taped it for television, dedicated the entire one-hour Mid-Atlantic show to that one match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it built such a story that people just loved it, and here all these years later are still talking, like you guys, about it.
Well, I think one of the reasons is because of the fact that you had two men in their primes who had absolute charisma in different ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you had a clear-cut good guy versus bad guy feel. But what's interesting about it is it almost, I mean, I think that it elevated you to the point where now you were in that, you know, first group of people who've ever gone from being the bad guy, loved so much that he becomes a good guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it, you know, it happened to Piper and it happened to Flair and it happened to you. Yeah. It's like those are the first three, you know, that I can think of that, you know, is just amazing. What was that transition like going from heel to face, and what was it like working that program with the Horsemen?
Yeah, great question. So I'm grateful, thankful to have an experience on both sides of it. And it is interesting because as the Russian Nightmare character, as we were building that character, you know, there was a lot of marketing back then, but, you know, Crockett's did T-shirts and different things like that. And it was interesting because Flair, you know, who was working predominantly babyface at the time, was had the number one T-shirt and all. But interestingly enough, number two right behind him was the Nikita Koloff T-shirt.
Yeah.
So I was the most hated guy voted, you know, in wrestling, you know, Baz to the Bad. To your point, there was a fan liking to a degree there. You know, I hate this guy, but I love this guy, you know, kind of thing, right?
Well, yeah, but you were the original bad guy with the bald head and goatee. You were Steve Austin 15 years before Steve Austin.
Yes. Yeah, Steve has yet to thank me for giving him that whole idea of Steven's dad. And I'm still waiting for the text message. Like, hey, dude, thank you for giving me that idea. Or Vince. Vince, yeah. Give it me. Right. At least a phone call saying thank you for the idea. Come on. Yeah. Steve wasn't all that stunning when he had the blonde hair. Come on. He had to shave the head and grow the goatee. Just saying, often imitated, never duplicated. Anyway, I'm just having fun. But no, to have that experience of you know, being, you know, that, hey, I mean, that hated to the point of death threats, phone calls to the Crockett office, to six different matches that fans actually got over the barricade in the ring, came after me. That happened six different times. Five times against Flair and once against Magnum TA up in his hometown or near his home of Norfolk, Virginia. But and then to flip the crowd, though, talk about an overwhelming experience to walk out to do it the way we did it. Mystery partner, who's it going to be? Nobody knew. Like, you couldn't do this again. I mean, with the internet and everything. Nobody knew. Crockett and Dusty and I all agreed. We would say, I continued to work. I knew it 3 weeks before, because that's when I came back from Japan, actually, and they informed me of Magnum's accident, which I thought they were, you know, ribbing me to begin with, and they finally convinced me. Anyway, that was 3 weeks before the turn, and so I continued to work every night as a heel, knowing I'm building towards Charlotte for the turn. Never, and we agreed not to say a word. I didn't even say a word to Island. I said to nobody. It was one of the best kept secrets. So when it happened that night, it not only caught all the fans in that building off guard, it caught all the boys in the dressing rooms off guard too, because nobody knew who that mystery partner was until 9 o'clock that night when I walked into the building after the matches had already started. And so that said, to go to the ring to illustrate it the way we did. Flip those people, I mean, on a dime. Now all of a sudden, same people who a month earlier were telling me how I was number one in their hearts, if you understand what I'm saying. now all of a sudden, for 15 minutes, are chanting my name. The guys got their shirts off. They're doing the most muscular pose. And then for the next 2+ years, formed the superpowers, travel, you know, and which was an incredible experience to have that one-on-one time with Dusty for that amount of time, and do sell out business wherever we went, whether it was, you know, singles, tags, four-man, six-man, eight-mans with the Road Warriors, and just stellar business against the Horsemen. And it was a night off every night, guys. And what I mean by that is going to the ring, those guys were all the guys, they were just such professionals that you could just go in there and just tell a story and have a dance, and the fans loved it.
That's awesome.
You know, in thinking about spending time with Dusty, do you think if Dusty wasn't a wrestler, that he would have ended up being like a stand-up comic or some kind of almost like, I see him as like a Will Rogers, kind of like a folky storytelling guy who could have traveled across the country and made millions of dollars just by smiling and telling his stories.
Yeah, he had such, and I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but I just reemphasize, he had such charisma, charisma, which is what the fans loved. You know, you know, somebody told me recently he did an interview one time. Said, "Yeah, my belly may be a little bigger than it should. My hind may not as small as it should be, baby deal. But nevertheless, the Mac and Dream Ducky Roll is going to take on the right." And he would just roll with an interview. There's no scriptwriter. He's rolling. He's spontaneously rolling with an interview. So yeah, to your point, man, he could have easily been like a kind of folk hero and just sat on stage and told stories and, as you said, made millions. He just had that charisma. He had it. He was gifted.
In your time in the NWA itself, before it became WCW, who would you say, out of all the people that, you know, you saw, you worked with, would be the one person that you would hang your hat on as being like, you know, this is the person I would have his back, you know, the minute something went down, this is the guy that I just absolutely respect, adore, and, you know, this is my guy?
Uncle Ivan and Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
I'll give you a twofold answer. Uncle Ivan and Dusty Rhodes.
And, you know, I mean, what was Ivan like behind the scenes in terms of, was he, you know, was he jovial, you know, in terms of personality, or was he, you know, kind of a business-oriented guy?
He was, it's a wonderful personality, always business-minded, meaning, you know, he didn't, you know, whatever finish he was doing, he didn't dispute it. He's like, okay, if it makes sense and it's going to draw business, then by golly, I'm going to do it. And so as far as I'm concerned, one of the nicest guys, you know, he was like an uncle to me, as much as an uncle to me as any uncle I had, and which is why I continued to, up to the time of his death, called him Uncle Ivan. I just that much respect for him. And, you know, to him and Don Kernodle's credit, I mean, much of my success I attribute to them, and then adding Dusty into that mix. I mean, there's a lot of guys I give credit to the success of my career, but certainly Ivan right up there at the top, and then, you know, Dusty continuing to put me in angles and storylines that would just further build my career to what it became. And again, nothing but the utmost respect and really love for the two of them, for both of them guys.
So, you know, and we talk about, you know, a little tradition here and, you know, the way Dusty was. Do you see in Cody what Dusty had in, you know, going out, doing AEW, and, you know, having that kind of charisma and business sense and just the guts and gall to do something like this, is that very reflective in kind of who Dusty was?
Yes. I mean, it'd be hard to, right? I mean, he grew up in it, right? He grew up around it and in it. And yeah, I remember him from the time, you know, Cody was in diapers, you know? So growing up in it and around it, I'm certain he attributed some of the characteristics of his dad with certainly some of his look, you know, unquestionable. But I will say this too: there's only one Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah,
I want to make a point of saying that there's only one Dusty Rhodes, which, you know, so Cody, as he comes into his own and becomes his own character and develops his own story, you know, his own identity, if you will. He's it's no question in my mind that he's attributed a lot of the skills and the abilities that we see, whether it's in ring or outside of the ring, because of what he saw and experienced being raised by his dad.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt. With your career, in 92, you had that feud with Vader. What exactly happened with the injury? And was it just, you know, I mean, obviously, Vader has had a reputation of being kind of a, you know, a stiff worker. Was it just a stiff clothesline that really just kind of rattled everything? Or, you know, what was it about? You know, did you have prior neck injuries? What led up to you having to kind of realize that this might be it?
Okay, good question. And it was, well, all right, let me start with, because I was, without question, we can use the word stiff, we can use the word solid. There's a lot of descriptions I might use.
Yeah.
Others who face me might use other descriptions, but no, I was a snug worker, a solid worker, a stiff worker. Vader, I would probably use a different terminology. The word reckless comes to mind.
Yeah.
he honestly had a bit of a reputation, and as well as a few other guys, of being careless, reckless in the ring.
Yeah.
And that said, the injury I sustained, they were not career-ending, and I'll explain that. We were fighting out on the floor. He did clothesline me. I didn't know he was coming. I mean, I was just kind of staggering around. He took like about a 10-yard run, clothesline me in the back of the head. My left arm went just limp. No movement, motionless, just hanging, dangling there for 3 or 4 minutes. Finally, started getting some tingling in a couple fingers and then a couple more finger than my hand, and eventually got movement back in my arm, finished the match, and reported that injury, and didn't know until the next morning, as I was going to go and have the neck checked, that I had some pain in my lower abdomen. Come to find out, it's 500-pound guy, so I got a hernia that night too, lifting him up, right? Picking him up, the big guy, right? So, that said, so I had the hernia surgery. I saw a number of different doctors, including a neurosurgeon and an MRI done on my neck. And basically what they concluded is said this: you're 33. We conclude you have the neck of about a 55-year-old man with bone spurring arthritis and a deteriorating disc because all, the pile driver suplexes, all, being a human crash dummy, right?
Right.
And they said, they go, we're not telling you this is crazy. What I am telling you is, this is the neurosurgeon, he said, the longer you continue in this career, you only need to take one bad bump, one bad hit in the turnbuckle, or basically is what he was saying, and to do some more, what could be way more serious damage. And of course,
right,
he was kind of referring to paralysis and things of that nature. So all that said, it's right around the Thanksgiving, getting ready to be Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays like we just passed, and I had already told Ivan and Don the day I broke in, I said, guys, I have a goal. Because remember, I didn't grow up dreaming of being a wrestler, right?
Right.
So when I came in, I had a business mindset. I'm here to draw money, but that would be profitable for the promoters and profitable for me, and the fans win. It's win-win-win for everybody. I win, promoter wins, the fans win, right? And so I told those guys, I'll be out of active wrestling in the ring, active by the time I'm 35. And we kind of argued back and forth. Finally, I just dropped it. And I said, okay. So anyway, I'm 33, getting ready to be 34. I got to have this hernia surgery and rehab from that. I'm rehabbing the neck. And guys, I just thought to myself, I go, you know what? By the time I go back, I'm going to be 30. I'm already going to be 34, maybe 34 and a half, maybe whatever, right? And I'm like,
yeah.
What's the point of going back for 6 months or 9 months? So, under my own terms, I told my family, go, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. And just, walked away and have become known in some circles as the Barry Sanders of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
If that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, that absolutely does. That absolutely does. And actually, that brings up a good question. You kind of brought up Vince McMahon. And you brought up Barry Sanders, so the natural link I make is, when is the Hall of Fame going to recognize you?
Most important to me, because I get that question all the time.
Yeah.
And truthfully, I mean, I was inducted in the NWA Hall of Fame in 2008.
Yep.
2003, I think I was inducted into the Dan Gable Museum Hall of Fame in Waterloo, Iowa.
Yep.
Anyone who's never been to Waterloo, go to that museum. You from a professional and an amateur standpoint, if you love wrestling, go to the Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo, Iowa. And so I was incredibly honored to be inducted into that Hall of Fame. If I never get inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, I'm totally cool with that. Most important to me personally is I want to see him. I'd like to see them induct Ivan into that hall, because the guy had a legendary career, gave his heart and literally his body to professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And is infamous for, I mean, come on, he defeated Bruno Sammartino,
exactly,
Madison Square Garden, you know, after an 8 year or 7 year, whatever championship run and about had a riot. I mean, yep. You know, give the guy his day. So yeah. That's more important to me than me getting in there is Ivan getting in there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things about Ivan Koloff that I think that, you know, got lost because of the fact that generationally, the boom happened in the 80s and people mm-hmm. saw him, you know, in one light, totally mm-hmm. not knowing about that, you know, that feud with Bruno, which
right.
could probably, if you look at the annals of wrestling history, you can arguably say might be one of the top 10 moments in wrestling history. And,
yeah.
You know, and like you said, the way you talk about him, the love that you have for him is just, you know, something that's wonderful. And I think that, you know, telling stories and getting the word out about him to make sure people remember. And I think that a push for the WWE Hall of Fame would be a great idea and maybe something we might want to take up here on the show.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Go look it up. Go research it. Yeah. I mean, Bruno San Martino, who was in right, legendary career, right? Mm-hmm. Bruno. I mean, they even put Bruno in the Hall, which, yeah. You know, at one point, you know, him and McMahon were at, like, odds. I mean, yep. You know, I mean, and little side note, Bruno not only wanted Ivan to have the strap, he was upset when they took it off him so quickly as well.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
He was not happy that he wanted to see Ivan have at least a year run with that belt, and because he knew it would draw, it would make money. He knew it would do business. But anyway,
well, so. That's a great, you know, the philosophy of the company for years and years and years with the WWF brand and the WWF brand was face champion. And, you know, it's very, you know, long stretches of just baby faces.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the trend started being, you know, well, heels are cool now. Heels get the belt. Do you think that there's something lost nowadays in the fact that whether or not you're heel or your face, long title runs just have kind of gone wayside?
Yeah. In my view, It cheapens the value of the belt, of the title itself, when it changes hands in 12 minutes. I mean, there's something to say about Bruno holding that belt for 7 or 8 years, whatever it was, whether yeah. babyface or heel. But and anyone from what I learned, old from Ivan and Don and other Dusty and others, old school. I mean, the heels having belts is what draws money, not the baby thing, because the fan wants to pay to come see the heel lose, right, exactly. And lose the title. So not that the baby faces, the good guys don't ever get the belts. They do, but traditionally anyway, and it's a lot different business now, right, but traditionally, you know, the good guy having the belt didn't really draw the fans are happy, but it didn't really draw the big money. It was when the heel would steal the belt and then you'd want to see him get retribution, get beat, and the good guy get the belt back that drew the money. So anyway, all of the philosophies all different. It changed now. You know, kudos to Billy Corgan, Dave Ligon, and the guys, you know, rebooting the NWA and what they're doing there. And with the studio wrestling, I love it because it brings back memories to me on 10th and Techwood. Definitely. And I hope they stick with that. I think they'll do a great get a great grassroots following if they stick with that, and maybe even follow some of that same philosophy as it looks like they're going to do. Mm-hmm. So
You are a born again Christian.
Yes, sir.
One of your probably greatest things that you've been able to witness through that is Colby having an album that actually charted.
Yeah.
Is like, did you ever imagine seeing, you know, your daughter go on to, you know, be a singer? Because like you said, you can't hold a tune unless it's in the shower. and she ends up a singer who turned it.
Suspect, but yeah, but,
yeah. Mm-hmm. What I mean, what has it been like? You know, your journey into you know, ministry, and you know, you mentioned Ted DiBiase. You know, and I know Lex has found his way a little bit too. It's just, yeah, it's amazing to watch how, you know, our heroes, when we grew up, you know, have gone on to find a higher calling and have been spreading a great word.
Well, again, I appreciate, you know, just the opportunity just to share a little bit about that, starting with Colby. My youngest daughter, so those who don't know, I have four daughters. Colby's the youngest of four, and they're all very successful in their own rights. Colby being the one who's very musically inclined. I mean, from the age of about three, she could hear a song on the radio, go over the piano, and play it. I mean, no lessons, no, couldn't even read a musical note, but could play it like you heard it on the radio. And so it was obvious from an early age she was musically gifted and inclined, and then when she began to sing, her debut actually was on a show that was on Lifetime that she was on for a couple of years called Preacher's Daughters on the Chick Channel there, Lifetime Network. I think it's still on Netflix. called Preacher's Daughters, but she debuted singing on that show, and nobody knew. Our oldest daughter and her husband were renewing their vows, and she wrote a special song just for the renewal of their vows that was all like legit for the show.
Wow.
And we're blown away by her, and then that launched her into this music career of not only singing but songwriting. At age 18, she signed a contract there in Nashville as a professional songwriter. And so, yeah, a lot of her songs and up on iTunes and other places, Pandora and other places, have just been, the lyrics have just been from the heart and have really just touched a lot of people's lives. And so just blown away by that, the blessing of seeing her have that type of a career. So as far as the family goes, on the flip side of that, you mentioned a number of the guys. I mean, I've been fortunate to have some sort of role in a number of the guys, whether it was just sharing. I remember one time, a couple years after I gave my life to the Lord, the guys were all wrestling in Charlotte, had seen him, and I cornered Sting for about 30 minutes and just, you know, just kind of threw up on him, actually. But I like to think of it now as, no, I was planting seed. I was really, you know, but I just shared my heart with him about what had happened. And then, you know, 3 years later, you know, come to find out, you know, he surrendered his life to the Lord. And, mm-hmm. of course, Lex, you know, in April 23rd, 2006, you know, he gave his heart to the Lord. And then I've had the privilege of kind of mentoring a number of these guys. Lex being one of them in 2015. For example, I had Lex live. I moved him into my house for 10 months. Had him living with me.
Wow!
And from that, we've done a lot of ministry together. We do these camps called Man Camp, where we bring men 18 years and older into camp for 5 days, and we just pour into them. We want to teach them everything we learned about being physically healthy, mentally healthy, emotionally healthy, spiritually healthy, and just the things we've learned. And so, what the guys, I think, have come for the listeners out there, if you're saying, well, what's the deal? You know, Sting, Lex Luger, Nikita, Ted DiBiase, Tully Blanchard, Magnum TA. I mean, what led these guys to go down that path and surrender their life to Jesus as opposed to going off in a different direction and maybe being, you know, found in a hotel room dead, which we know quite a few wrestlers have gone down that path, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yes. I think for these guys, as I know some of their personal stories, as much success as they had, they still found themselves, like I did, unfulfilled, unsatisfied, even through the roar of the crowd and all the title belts and accolades and everything that came from professional wrestling. We all realized something was still missing, which was leaving us unfulfilled. And I know the day I went to the altar, 17 October 1993, I could truthfully say to you on this podcast tonight that if I died that day, I would have died a fulfilled man, because there was something that I experienced and encountered at the altar that day that just changed my life forever. And some of these guys have experienced that very same thing that we've already mentioned. So it's been an incredible journey the last 25 years, because I traveled, guys, as I mentioned, now to 29 countries. I have on the radar, starting this year, a goal of 20 countries over the next 5 years to do ministry in.
Wow.
I've been fortunate to minister in a plus or minus about 1,200 churches over the last 20 years.
Wow.
And, yeah, I do all kinds. I mean, from men's conferences to breakfast, lunch, dinners to revivals and crusades. And, I mean, crusades in Africa. And the largest crowd, and Lex was actually with me on this, was just a few years ago in Jamaica, where he and I were able to share our story, our transformation from superstar wrestler to follower of Jesus. The crowd was, there was over 73,000 in attendance that night.
Wow.
Shared that story.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So it's been an amazing journey, guys. It really has been an amazing journey.
That's amazing, man. That just the power is phenomenal there. So
Yeah.
So as we're starting to wind down here, Nikita, I'd like to do a segment on the show. It's a word association segment. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to name off a few names from the business. Just tell me the first thing that pops into your head when I say the name. You don't have to confine it to one word, and we're going to do this for 70 seconds. Are you ready, sir?
I'll give it my best shot.
All right.
Sin City Steve, 70 deadly seconds starts now.
Ivan Koloff.
The consummate professional.
Crusher Khrushchev.
A talented individual.
Don Kernoodle.
Grateful for all the wisdom, knowledge that he gave me that led to the success of my career.
Dusty Rhodes.
Ingenious man, one of the most creative men I've ever met in my lifetime.
Dick Murdoch.
Foghorn Leghorn, the funniest man I think I've ever met in professional wrestling. Dirty Dick Murdoch.
Ric Flair.
Could make a broomstick look good. He made me look good in the ring.
Lex Luger.
He is known as the total package. Now he's the complete package.
Sting.
Icon.
Ricky Steamboat.
The smoothest, most white meat baby face I've ever squared off against in the circle.
And last but certainly not least, Magnum TA.
Grateful, thankful that our chemistry in the ring led to an infamous event called the Best of Seven Series.
Awesome.
So, Nikita, I want to get just a little bit more information. You mentioned Man Camp during the interview here. Can you just give us a little bit more information on that? So if anyone is interested, they can look that up and try to participate.
Yeah, we do. Again, it's for men 18 years or older. I mean, any man is welcome to come. We do them here in the Carolinas, we spend, it's a 5-day catalyst. We tag team together on this and just pour into these men's lives and just want to see men be healthier in every aspect of their life. And so just simply called Man Camp. You can go to just mancamp.info. Mancamp.info is one direction to the website, or simply koloff.org, koloff.org. And we do those once in the spring, one in the fall. So we'll do another one here at the end of April, and another one in October.
Okay.
So we got those catalysts that we do, he and I together, and then lots of other events I do. Books too. If somebody's interested, they can also direct message me, email me through either one of those websites.
Okay.
Might be interested. I've got three books currently. I'm working on a fourth book.
Okay.
Yep. And so one book's inspirational, the other's motivational, one's a life story. This newest one that will come out most likely in 2020 will be more of a daily reflection for people. Mm-hmm. And they can follow me on social media. I do have a Facebook presence, but mostly I'm on Twitter and Instagram, Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it. That's the real me, Nikita Koloff with the number one behind it. If you're looking on Facebook, me on Facebook, you'll see a picture with me, Ted DiBiase, and another friend in the Jordan River in Israel being baptized. That's the real me on Facebook.
Okay.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Nikita, man, thank you for hanging out with us this evening. We appreciate it.
Man, you guys have been awesome. I love the questions. I appreciate you letting me share just a little bit of my story. And kudos to you guys. I congratulate you guys on your podcast. I know you're going to go far and hope to impact a lot of people's lives with what you guys are doing.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Bad Boys of Podcasting.